Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
From the glow of St. Paul's number one, welcome to another edition of Cabin Country. Give us the time and we'll take you out of the traffic and away from the levee. Let's find the place where the loons call out among the moonlit waves, where the wind sighs among the Norway pines. Pull up a dock chair, have a sip of your coffee, and get a line in the water. This is Cabin Country. Now here's Bjorn Lloydsted, and I'm Fudd Klugman with another woodland escape.
All right, it's fireside time here, 7:35 p.m.
Late in the season, and we're getting plenty of dark skies by this time of night. Tradition, Fudd, sitting around the fire ring and burning off the snags we hauled in from doing our part to reduce the fire load, bringing in snags down trees that are dry enough to burn, and Swedish saw and the pruning saw and getting these things shaped up. It used to be the case that we'd come up here and it would be sort of the manly man contest with splitting maul and double-bladed axes. And I think we realized shortly thereafter a couple pulled muscles and some powerful blisters. Maybe it was time to switch back to the Swedish saw and the pruning saw and make short work of it. Take care of, like I said, reducing the fire load and just enjoying an evening. The Gull River gets mighty quiet this time of day.
It does. And with the wind coming out of the north, even though it's barely a breeze, we're hearing 210 crossing the river just about a mile up. And it's a little bit of a roar, but it still is quiet.
It is. It is. One of my favorite things about this place is the occasional, if we're here at the right time of year, hearing gunnery practice from distant Camp Ripley.
Nice.
And, here we are. It's the 11th of October, and we're getting in on a couple things. It's grouse season, and it is also clearly waterfowl season. And, taken out the sea queen to enjoy the spans of the Gull River today and fought with the classic engine trouble a little bit, but
a little bit
got through it and came into port limping under oar power, but by and large it went well. But to hear the 12 gauges going off, colorful leaves, cool air, sunny, and the report of the 12 gauge shotguns, somebody somewhere is hopefully bagging their limit. And that said, still seeing seagulls kind of turning circles over the river and the very large great blue herons landing in treetops and then lighting again in the water. It's a beautiful thing. This time, Fudd, we haven't seen any osprey. I haven't seen an osprey yet.
No, I thought I heard one earlier, but I think one was kind of hollering. It was either chasing or being chased by something else pretty large. Don't know if it was a bald eagle or not, but in fact, I think the blue herons were squawking away around the same time, so I thought I heard one. But the geese are flying about. I haven't seen many ducks in the air. We've heard gunshots in the back bay across the way there, but so I don't know what they're seeing. But we did kick up a couple of grouse today, didn't we?
We did, yes. Walking along the highway, not even the highway, just the road leading in to this back stretch of the Gull River, and seeing, underbrush being at a minimum, it was time to get into the woods, and there were paths headed down. We wanted to see on the edge of some of the sloughs, are there you know, telltales of hunters and successes or tragedies? You know, are there spent shell cases? We heard some noises. Decided we'd walk a little bit. Thought at first perhaps just some pretty aggressive squirrels, and all of a sudden the running and the chirping turned into a burst from cover. And one grouse that came up, and we decided, hey, it's time to walk into the thicker stuff and see if we can't flush that grouse again. You had your camera FUD. You were ready to catch that image. And I think it hunkered down and decided, I'm staying put. You're not going to get me out of here.
Yeah, it was pretty thick. Yeah, we could have walked right on top of it. But I was waiting for the explosion to scare the wits out of me, but it just never happened. We gave up after about 10 minutes.
And almost sort of swimming through brambles and undergrowth. It was pretty thick. So we decided, hey, we'll walk back. About that point, a whitetail decided to run deeper into the woods. We saw that take off. And then that same sound again. And I'll be darned if there we didn't see kind of gliding among the trees. There's yet a second rough grouse. So that was exciting, and it was good news. And I know we both talked about perhaps cleaning, retuning the 12 gauges and perhaps taking a walk in the woods at some point ourselves, seeing what we can't scare up.
Someday, yes. It's we keep talking about it. Someday we'll maybe actually follow through.
Talk is cheap. Yeah, we'll have to do that. But people were out. We kept hearing it. We kept seeing it. It was kind of fun, too, to hear this very loud vessel coming down river at one point after multiple reports from 12-gauge shotguns. From the sounds of it, I'm guessing it was a 12, or several 12s. Sounded semi-automatic, because they were in quick repeat. And three guys, totally bedecked in camo, head to toe, paint on the faces, and in a boat, kind of a low-slung boat with about a 40 horse. Sounded very loud, I might add. I'm not quite sure what was up with that engine, but they had the entire vessel kind of laden down with imitation reeds, and some real ones too. I think it looked like a floating island going down the river. So these guys were in it to win it, and still shooting by about 4 o'clock. So it was starting to kind of turn that corner of when it was time to put the guns away, and they were the diehards. They were going to be, you know, right there till the end, and then we saw them come back up river again. That was it. And also, while we sojourned down the river at the mercy of the Mariner 9 horse, we passed by a fast-moving, large pontoon. And he went to one end of the river and then came back again hauling a floating dock.
Yeah.
So it's time to take the dock out, October 11th.
Yep, one guy dragging his floating dock somewhere downriver, and another neighbor kind of ratcheting on the pontoon on his pontoon trailer, getting that ready. So people are moving out. The hunters are still active, but that's kind of why I like this time of year. It's things quiet down.
Well, we thought we'd take just this moment as the fire catches yet again and kind of comes back to life. We'll call this the special edition of Cabin Country. The campfire side food edition. We'll talk about some of the things that FUD and I have sustained ourselves with on these many years of trips up to the Gull River. And specifically around the campfire, in the early days, when we first started doing this, I know there was a favorite in the early times was chili dogs, FUD.
Oh, yes.
Putting the can of some type of canned chili over the fire and letting it kind of start to boil and bubble, and then getting a huge fire going. And back in those days, it was truly almost a fire event, you know. How big a fire could we get going? And that is not necessarily the best way to go about things unless you're keen on having to put out the surrounding woods, which we're not. So cutting of green sticks and hot dogs on the fire, in the fire, I guess I should say, while the chili bubbled away over a grate. And I recall on that trip, too, I was in my how much can we get for as little possible money. And I'd found a bag, several bags in a convenience store of, hey, these are almost brand name snacks. Me, I kind of like these cheesy flavored things that, well, trying to avoid lawsuits here, Fudd, but cheese doodle kind of things. There's a better name for them, but this was an off-brand, and boy were they off. And we ate our char-roasted dogs and our slightly over-charred chili all together, and realized we're getting kind of full and not super happy to be that way, and decided it was time to offer up said cheese product, crispy snack, to the fire. And I have never seen a fire catch like those things. I have no idea what the fat content of those things were, but it was better than a can of gasoline. I'll say that much.
A good fire starter.
Oh, an excellent fire starter. Excellent fire starter. Now, it's slowly morphed over time, Fudd, into something a little more sedate and a little less fire specific. Perhaps you'd like to enlighten us on where this has taken us in the past few years.
You're right. Well, you know, it becomes more about convenience and not having to clean up after yourself and wait too long to make it, not have to spend too much time cleaning it up after yourselves. So, I don't know when it was, a good several
like
years.
6 years ago, probably, yeah.
That we decided, let's just get a pound of bird. We're like, in this case, turkey, a sliced turkey breast. Maybe sometimes with a pepper seasoning on it, but just basically your oven roasted turkey breast, and it's pretty, you know, get it from the deli up here, and some good bread or favored bread that, I mean, because you know any good sandwich, it's the bread that really makes it, but that way, you know, the only thing is it becomes our lunch and our dinner. Maybe breakfast on the morning we leave. So it you do get tired of it, so it is kind of a turkey fest. But hey, it's pretty easy. Now, this evening we did something a little different.
True.
We decided while we were at our favorite, our traditional hangout store on the Saturdays we're up here in the fall, I just decided to grab a big can of beans.
It's delicious.
I thought, well, hey, it's filling and full of fiber, and
it's delicious.
It's kind of a cowboy thing, so we'll just open up the can and stick it over the fire and let it boil in the can. And I can't say what the air is going to be like in the cabin a little later, but but it was satisfying.
Lots of turkey, lots of beans. So yeah, it could make for an interesting evening. But the bottom line is, at the end of the day, when you got paper plates, you know, the tail end of that turkey sandwich, you're starting to feel a little staunch through the midsection. You add it to the fire. You offer it up to the fire, and it's all gone. There's nothing to clean. I will say this much: by the end of the weekend, we're done with turkey. There's no question of that.
That's right.
Don't need to see turkey again for several months. So, anyway.
Hey, I hope you're not planning on getting back to that chores list. This is Cabin Country. Get back in your easy chair and grab your coffee mug. We got some more stories to tell. A long day's angling or an end to the afternoon's water skiing brings with it a trophy-size hunger. And no place satisfies that hunger better than the Cracklin' Jack Pine, Crow Wing County's unique supper club. Cracklin' Jack's offers you the finest house salads with your choice of dressings, an anchor-sized foil-wrapped baked potato, and all the tap beers and mixed drinks you've come to expect when dining out. And the kicker? You get to cook your own meat to your own personal likings and tastes. Bring in your own porterhouse, T-bone, or New York strip. You're the chef. You decide when your meat is medium rare or well done. And if you'd like to leave the meat course to us, we proudly offer our half-pound whitetail frank, a mighty link that will sizzle and hiss on our custom 15 by 20 foot char grill that you'll find in the Jack Pine Grill Room. Any seasoning you might need is there for you, and you'll never run out of butter. Join us at the Cracklin' Jack Pine. Your chef's hat and apron are optional, and reservations are still strongly suggested. The Cracklin' Jack Pine is now proudly offering a mix of Roquefort and French dressings for those who like something a little different on their salads. We hope to see you soon at the Cracklin' Jack Pie. Now let's join Fudd and Bjorn back in cabin country.
I think we should touch upon some of the other foodstuffs that we, you know, have experienced in the great outdoors. And I'm thinking of some distant Canada trips.
Oh, yeah.
Where we came up with a special recipe to, again, I think it was just a matter of convenience. And at this time, we're talking about three white guys in their 20s camping up in Canada. And what are we going to do for something that's... Well, I don't even know what we were thinking, but why don't you...
I have no idea. I do know this. For some strange reason, we ended up with, in the larder, there were multiple cans of kind of a mixed vegetable collection. There was types of soup with the white and red labels. We'll just call it turkey vegetable. And there was something else that went into it. For the life of me, I don't recall what it was exactly. But a couple cans of that turkey vegetable and then about five cans of this just mixed veggie blast in a can. And we had been out canoeing and fishing and swimming and the whole day. And college-age guys, not a lot of planning going into it and what's going to get eaten. I don't know. You know, how many power bars can you chew down in one day? How much candy have you got? This kind of thing. But now it's time and everybody's tired and it's the end of the day and there's a fire going and what in the world is going to fill you up? And we were all hollow. I mean, we were ready to chew through the tires of the car if we couldn't find anything. But there was this pot full of stuff, largely turkey vegetable soup and just mixed vegetables all steaming away. And it was given the odd name... Crew cut with a K. K-E-R-E-W-K-U-T-T. And we even took it so far as to name it Crazy Canadian Crew Cut. Of course, all again.
All with a K.
With Ks. And for no reason other than the drive up, you pass all these convenience stores. Since when people started spelling convenience with a K, I don't know. But lots of different... Or clean, you know, clean your car. Again, the Ks. I'm like, boy, we are getting creative with our spelling here. So it became Crazy Canadian Crew Cut. And oddly enough, under Canadian stars, 8-9 o'clock at night, you're hollow, absolutely empty. Boy, that stuff tasted pretty good.
Mouth-watering.
It went down well. It was good.
And I don't know that it would ever taste like that again. And frankly, it would probably be fairly ghastly if we sat down to it right now. If I tried to offer it to my senior in high school and my eighth grader, I'd probably... be asked what exactly I had in mind. You know, what are you planning on doing with this, Dad? Because we're not going to eat it. But, you know, at the end of a long day and you don't know what to do. Man, that worked pretty well.
That was good. I think you have to be, well, very hungry and not want to work too hard to prepare that meal.
Well, we certainly fit those two categories. I'll say this much, too. Large gallon jugs of that sort of grocery store version of apple juice, or is it apple cider? You tell me. It's in a big glass jug. We brought that up with us. And, you know, a little of that goes a long way. When talking tonight about beans and turkey, let's start drinking large quantities of apple juice from glass. Let's just say it helped propel us in the canoe, perhaps. But the hornets were thick at that point in the summer. And we decided, hey, here's an idea. We'll just leave the top off one of these glass gallon jugs of apple juice and see if that doesn't take care of it. And I'll be darned if it didn't work.
It did.
They left us alone, but boy, in the morning you got out of your tent and you got up and you looked at that lake and you thought about jumping in it because it was still pretty warm. And there were about 300 dead hornets in that apple juice. So
it worked. That was a good plan.
Worked like a charm.
You know, Bjorn, I wanted to bring up the subject of s'mores. Now, I'm born and bred in Minnesota, and as, well, we can surmise from cabin country and the memories There were many campfires, many trips up here in cabin country, and having, cooking a lot of food over the fire. We did roast marshmallows, but never s'mores. Never s'mores, and yet it seems to be ever-present. Like, how could you grow up and go camping and not enjoy or love s'mores? And I'm an anomaly. How about yourself, Bjorn?
Well, then there's a group of two anomalies sitting around the fireside here on the Gull River tonight. I'll be honest with you. You know, I'm not a fan. I don't care for. I like the marshmallow. As a kid, that was definitely a part of. We camped traditionally with another family for years when the kids were younger. It was an affordable way to get outside and get away from home for a while and enjoy the great outdoors. And that family really enjoyed s'mores. That was an evening sort of event. You know, it was something to do. It was something they enjoyed. They also did this thing where they did the campfire pie maker. You know, you'd use store-bought white bread and a can of pie filling and then some powdered sugar, which you'd add later, but you'd put the bread in these pie irons and you'd fill them up with cherry pie filling, apple pie filling, whatever, and then you stick them in the fire coals and just let them go for a while. And then they'd take them out, and if they weren't too scorched, put a little powdered sugar on them and let them cool a little bit, because, boy, you want to talk about the next best thing to food napalm. I mean, that stuff was hot and sticky and, oh boy, your tongue, you talk about pizza going under your chin and you get the third-degree burn under your chin. Well, this brought new meanings to the word hot food item that could really cause some damage. But, yeah, s'mores was always something they wanted to do, and it was interesting how each passing year, with each passing trip, I'd become less and less social about this time of the night, where I'd just be like, I don't want it. I don't like it. I'll have a marshmallow, or maybe I'll just eat one of the chocolate bars here. I don't want the hot graham cracker mush. I don't know. And yet the rest of the members of my family absolutely love them. I've mentioned before, we do a family trip every summer, at least. If we get the call, to go up near the Boundary Waters, and that's one of that camp's two nights out of the week. It's about a six-day week at that camp, and the seventh you clean up and you leave it cleaner than you found it and you go home. But two nights of the week, there are s'mores social events. And one of them, and it's a great idea, you make s'mores in the fire, and then you give it to someone you don't know, and you introduce yourself. That's all well and good, and I love it. And for me personally, it's changed a little bit in the last few years. I've discovered I'm gluten intolerant. I do get quite ill. It's not just one of those fashionable things that people do. I really feel the pain, as it were. So it's just, I had to. Oh shucks, I can't eat s'mores anymore. Now I have an out. But yeah, I'll be honest with you, Fudd. I don't. I'm one of those that few percentile that. Born and raised in Minnesota, lived here, enjoyed the outdoors and been in it and loved it, and I don't get the s'mores thing.
All right, then.
I don't get it.
Me neither. Like your family, my family too, my wife and kids love s'mores. When we come up here, we have them. And oddly enough,
almost a necessity. It's like if it doesn't happen, something's wrong.
Right. What's funny is that my wife grew up with her parents really never camped. They really weren't outdoors people. But yet the s'mores tradition was just somehow
ingrained,
picked up and ingrained. But, well, it's all right. I mean, I've had a few, and that's great, and my kids love it, and that's fine. But I just wanted to speak out for those of us who... I just didn't want people to assume that every Minnesotan or everybody that goes camping or cooks something over a fire loves s'mores or did a lot as they were a kid. Just thought I'd mention it.
Well, I did find last year, Fudd, while I was prepping for Halloween, now you can find just about every flavor of candy corn out there that you can imagine. And sure enough, there they were, s'mores candy corn. And oddly enough, I had to have them. I had to have them. Those and the caramel apple candy corn and the traditional and then the chocolate. And it was all kind of mixed together. That style, those three styles in one bag. But then the s'mores were on by themselves. And ironically enough, those did not go over real well with my kids, who will generally, you know, you could coat sandpaper and sugar, and they'd say, wow, this is great. I don't know where, wow, where's this been all our life? But boy, that, I like s'mores, Dad. This isn't really working for me. And that kind of surprised me, because I thought, well, they're not all that bad, actually. There's no graham cracker. I, you know, cheers to those who love them. It's a great Minnesota, upper Midwest camping tradition, to be true, to be sure. And that's great. But I, yeah, I'm with you, Fudd. I don't need a s'more. I don't need a s'more ever again. And that's all right. You know, that's all right.
All right, then.
Well, we're going to stoke the fire a bit more and take a short sponsor break. And while we do that, it's all right if you want to go and gather your s'mores making materials, marshmallows, graham crackers, chocolate bars. I promise Bjorn and I won't give you any dirty looks. We'll be right back.
This episode of Cabin Country brought to you by Dick Berditzman's Sizzlin' Bits. A weekend in the sticks gets off to starts and fits without sizzlin' bits. Get your mitts on the bits. They're a hit.
This week on Lakefront Lifestyles, Marlene and Chops take a run at redoing a 1920s Cedar Shake Cottage lake home on the Minnesota shores of Lake Superior. Our couple, Tuck and Kelly, are hoping to bring a modern touch to this classic piece of lakefront history.
The vintage look of the window shutters is passé and tired in the 21st century. This is not a Cape May beachfront property. Tuck and Kelly want a fresh face on this grand old matron, and I think I have the ideas that will meet with their approval.
Mara always has the great ideas, and I'm the guy who can get them all swinging and move the project along. I've always been the grin and the brawn behind Mara's great ideas. If the couple says turn the place into a car wash with a public restroom, I'll rough it in for them.
That's swell.
Well, I'm a financial planner with a love for the waterfront, and I can see a great investment in Superior Shoreline when I see one. Evidently. I'm picturing a waterfront garage for my jet skis and my cabin cruiser, and perhaps more of a pier than a dock going out into the big lake they call Gitche-Gumee. As for the cabin, or house, I think Kelly has a real open mind and has always been a fan of Mar and Chops on cable. Ooh. I think any ideas Mar has for the interior and the exterior of this place will go over well with Kel.
I'm picturing removing those cedar shakes and the shutters and going for more of a muted beige vinyl siding. I see Chops taking out the multi-chimney pot stone fireplace, and we'll go with space-saving baseboard heating. I've also found these plywood cutouts of Ma and Pa bending over picking weeds that can be put out front of the cabin facing the road. Cute and funny, don't you think?
What about a hot tub with a resistance lap pool on the dock? Unless you can get the variance for the pier. I'm seeing a man cave for Tuck actually on the pier with space for his nightclub beer fridge and his vintage Space Invaders game. And am I crazy, or does that sound like the coolest thing ever?
Can you wire the dock for the neon light at the far end of the structure that welcomes guests to the property?
Hello, and welcome.
I noticed a lot of mature oaks and maples around the structure and the grounds. I don't want to sound lazy, but I am no fan of raking and bagging.
Right.
Any thoughts on that?
I have a visual artist friend who works in found objects and creates full-size replicas of palm trees. Chops can anchor those to the ground with poured footings. Chops, is your chainsaw running? And is your cleanup crew ready to go to work?
Amen. Let's do this.
Lakefront Lifestyles. Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern Time.
Now back to Bjorn Lloydstedt and Fudd Klugman in Cabin Country.
Cream of tomato.
Well, so is there something that you can't live without if you are going to go camping? Or is there another staple? Now, we've mentioned chili dogs are big. I still enjoy chili dogs. Even my wife, who is like 99% vegetarian, but when we come up here, you know, it's just something you do. Well, there you go. Maybe to some people it's s'mores, and to others it's chili dogs. So, I don't know, like, what are the other meals you have up at with your that when you go up with your family? Is there other?
Yeah, you know, there is a tradition that's kind of become. Well, it's a tradition. I don't need to get redundant here. But this is a classic, and it always goes over well. A couple layers of really heavy gauge aluminum foil. A hamburger patty. Bunch of cut potatoes, bunch of cut carrots. Any other veg you want to throw in there is fine, but Jim, it's potatoes and carrots have to be there. And usually something is just straight up normal, is seasoned salt, right? Salt and pepper or seasoned salt. Then you seal these things and you get that campfire started as sort of evening's setting in, and they just get set right in the fire, you know, near the edge. And they have the inglorious name in my wife's family, hobo dinners. But, you know, if you've been out hiking, or like we did this out east when we were doing some hikes that kind of turned into low-grade mountain climbing kind of stuff, some pretty good-sized mountain hills out there. Remember climbing Mount Abraham, you know, I think we were on a trip in New England, and it was a big hike. I mean, it took hours, and you got up to the top, you were several thousand feet up, and there were gliders zipping over. Mm-hmm. It was cool. It was really wild. And we were out there at the time when the fields were cut, but there were pumpkins everywhere. The colors were turning. And apple orchards were in full swing. You stopped in any store, you know, in New England. So there was farm-made, strong cheddar cheese. There were every apple you can imagine just picked, you know. And then jugs of fresh cider on ice. And that was all good. And we did the... We did those camping dinners or hobo dinners again, and it was like, man, nothing tastes better if you've really worked, you know? I thought about that today as we were, like, pulling on the ripcord of that Mariner and then paddling back in or dragging, you know, down wood and bucksawing it. Oh, maybe get some foil and make some hobo dinners. But, no, man, I had my pound of turkey and two pieces of bread. I'm slowly going into a coma as we speak, so it's that's good too, and I enjoy it, don't get me wrong. I love it, pickle plank and the mayo and the mustard, and it's all good. I love it. But yeah, that for me is probably kind of a critical. If I can find a bun that's gluten-free that isn't horrid, boy, there's nothing like the hot dog or the chili dog right over an open fire. I like that too. That's awfully good. But yeah, if my kids are with me or you know, my family's along, or with extended family, you better believe before all is said and done and that last ember goes out, boy, if there aren't chocolate bars, graham crackers, and marshmallows. And then watching the younger ones, you know, like the four-year-olds trying to figure out how to do the marshmallows without, like, creating a charcoal briquette. And do you want this one, Uncle?
Yeah.
I gotta be honest. How do I say no here without hurting your feelings? I'm not sure, but sure, thank you. And then wow, the fire got really bright there for a second on that corner. What happened? I don't know. You turned your back. I know. I'm a bad man. I don't know what to tell you. I'm a bad man, Fudd. But they get it. In fact, I've got a nephew who keeps reminding me, you can't eat these. This is wheat gluten. You can't eat this. Want one?
That's right.
Oh, you can't eat this. Thank you.
No, I can't.
No, I can't. How about yourself? A chili dog? Anything else come to mind?
You know, it's funny. We tried to... You know, be health conscious and try some leaner hot dogs, or maybe even some vegetarian hot dogs. So no meat hot dogs. Yeah, that's bad. That's even my wife, who, like I said, is for the most part vegetarian, is like, no, it's not worth it. If you're gonna have a hot dog, it's got to be a real hot dog. Yes, it's salty and greasy and probably not good for you, but It's still soul food, yes.
There might be a couple religious beliefs that'll challenge that, but by and large, I'm kind of the mind you only live once. And I'll be honest with you too, Fudd. Coming up here, driving through small town Minnesota, headed north, and you pass by some pretty reputable meat markets. And if you can get, you know, a hot dog, I've got a favorite place that's got a couple chains in Piers and Little Falls. Let's just say I won't name names here, but they're pretty well known for their bacon. And or there's some places in Minneapolis, St. Paul, where, boy, they make their own in-house hot dogs. And boy, those things, it's fine dining. on a metal skewer going into that fire. And that over a veggie pup, oofda. Wow, no comparison. Got more power to those who can eat a flame-roasted vegetarian hot dog. I don't know. I don't know how you can do it. You're a better person than I.
Say it kind of makes me think of that movie, Defending Your Life. It was with Albert Brooks.
Oh, yes.
Rip Torn. And,
you bet.
There was a scene between the two where they're having lunch, and Rip Torn is eating, well, what just looks like a piece of crap. And he's saying, this tastes great to me because of my superior development. You know, this looks like crap, but it tastes amazing to me. And Albert Brooks is wincing at it and everything. Well, I think that's what happens with the veggie dogs. It's like, if you've convinced yourself that it tastes really good, well, that's more power to you. But just give me the old greasy stuff, and if you can avoid a stomach ache, all the better. But
that helps. That does help. I do recall our last chili dog outing up here. It was made for a long evening. There were a couple of us sitting around. To quote you, Fudd, we felt like we'd eaten
Sunday's paper.
Absolutely. You better believe it.
Yes, indeed.
But it tasted good going down.
I haven't been able to convince my family. Well, I even at home, Sloppy Joe's doesn't go up. That used to be another staple growing up with my dad. You know, you buy these cheap white buns, and you brown some hamburger, throw some ketchup and mustard in it, and a little brown sugar and salt and pepper, and you've got Sloppy Joe's. And, well, I used to like those. They're just kind of sweet, tangy, and meaty. But, no, the tradition hasn't been able to be passed down.
Nope, hasn't gone over well in our house either. I will say this much curious aspect going back to the days at Daggett Lake. And my dad, if you were at the cabin, that Weber kettle grill was going to get fired up, usually on Saturday night. And his favorite thing was, and this has always struck me as kind of iffy. I don't know, maybe I'm not very good at grilling. I'm okay with steaks, burgers, shish kebabs, chops, things like that, but he'd do chicken. And I know you've got to be careful. You don't want to scorch the outside and then have, you know, raw rubber bird on the inside and flirting with food poisoning. But he'd do it just fine. But his idea of what made for a good, you know, sort of almost like a barbecue sauce, he was all over French dressing. And for the life of me, and it was all the rage there for a while because, oh, this is so good. And I was 8. Sure it is. Great. You know, sisters would come up with their husbands or whatever, the aunts and uncles. Boy, this is interesting, Richard. What is this? it's Weber kettle chicken. Believe it or not, French dressing.
The French.
I think a lot of times people kind of looked and shook their heads and said, oh, I believe it. I don't like it, but I believe it. Had a tendency. There's a high sugar content there, and boy, would that catch fire. You know, it was candied barbecued chicken. It was a bit much, but at the time, I loved it. And he made some other interesting things, too. My mom was a church organist, so on Sundays, he'd do the cooking. And Sundays could get really, really interesting. If he made some curious loaves, dare I say. It was meat, and it was in a pan. I don't know what else it was, but it was, from time to time, inedible. But he was also the guy that would go afield, and he'd come home with pheasants. He'd come home with grouse, and boy, that was good. You know, that was what kind of hooked me in, however you want to say it. I've had a great respect for the well-cooked, well, rough grouse or a nice pheasant dinner. That's good stuff. Winter, my dad didn't want to bring, you know, wheel the big charcoal grill outside when it's 10 degrees and snow everywhere and colder than all get out, but he had a small hibachi grill, like a Japanese hibachi, and he'd get that going, and he could just have that out on the back stoop, cement slab, and he didn't have to move all kinds of things. And he'd do steaks, and every now and again you'd get a winter sunny day, and some of that snow would kind of melt, and you'd see the dead grass and the dirt around the edges. At one point, he had made steak, and grilled steak, and the neighbors used to just give us grief. Oh, you have steak every Sunday. You're just rich. It's like, no, it's just something my dad sees as important, so he set aside the money for that, you know. Anyway, he grilled these steaks, and my mom was sawing away through hers, and all of a sudden she's, oh my God, I think I just bit into a rock. Wait a minute, there's dirt all over this thing. Richard, what did you do? There's dead grass on this. Did you kick over the grill? And again, this is classic. He's trying to not skip a beat. No, no, no. And all, he just couldn't stop. He, that Cheshire Cat look on his face. Yeah, I guess I'm sorry. I knocked it over. If you might remember from an earlier podcast, the same kind of sound when he let go of Mom's 5-pound Northern. I was going to take it up and clean it, but it just jumped and got out of my hand. You let it go. Well, he was giving her a steak, medium well, with lawn clippings and dirt. And, well, that was never forgotten either, I'll say that much, so.
There will now be a short intermission.
All right. When we return, Bjorn will share one of his mom's refreshing lunch recipes for hot summer days at the cabin. And then we'll return to the Oakdale studio for another dive into the Schmidt Scenic beer can collection. So hang in there, and we'll be back in a bit.
Cabin Country would like to thank you for making the Cabin Country podcast the number one podcast on GSPN, the Gas Station Podcast Network. If your favorite gas station doesn't play Cabin Country while you are at the pumps filling your tank, please tell them that you want to hear Cabin Country while you gas up. Nothing says gas like Cabin Country. And now our friend good old Lloyd would like to talk to us about Cramwell Soups.
Every home chef and sportsman alike knows the value of enlivening the flavors of many Minnesota game species. In their prime, nothing beats the flavor of corn-fed pheasant or a deep-water walleye. But not all creatures were created equal. A particular goose on its own can be greasy, fatty, or strong. Venison can have a gamey flavor that overrides its hidden subtleties. A late-season lake perch may taste more like the lake bed than you'd like. You worked hard to hook or bag that trophy. What can you do to improve the flavor? Every angler, hunter, and household chef knows the importance of reaching for the right condiments when our quarry doesn't taste as good as it might. The chefs at Cramwell's have always offered you that valuable pantry ingredient, Cramwell's Cream of Wildlife Soup. Cream of Wildlife will take the dog days out of fish, the gamey out of game, and the wild out of wildlife. And it makes a keen hot dish ingredient, too. A can of Cream of Wildlife and your latest catch cooked low and slow. Nothing ever tasted better coming out of the oven. Add it to a saddle of venison, you'd think you were dining at the Four Seasons. And let's not forget that Cream of Wildlife tastes mighty good by itself as a soup course or a quick deer shack lunch. Cramwell's Cream of Wildlife Soup. It's in your pantry.
We're glad to see you're still with us. Let's get back to Bjorn Fudd in Cabin Cut.
I seem to recall you had a story about a hot July day and eating something in the boat.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, we were, again, it was July. It was, mid-July and 90-degree days. We had a little cabin that, you know, I've described it a million times, but it was a fishing shack. It was part of a fishing resort. And not high-end, you know, just up on cinder blocks and knotty pine paneling. And a bathroom off the main room and two bedrooms. That was it. And no air conditioning, obviously. I'm not even sure we had fans. It was just... It was hot in the cabin, it was hot on the lawn, it was hot on the dock, you got on the boat. Oh, we'll go out, we'll have lunch on the lake, there'll be a breeze, it'll be cooler, it'll be good. And, there's times where people don't plan ahead real well. I don't know that we understood it was going to be 95 degrees in the shade that day, but we decided we'd go out and eat lunch in the boat. In fact, we'd find Moonlight Bay, a little dog leg right after the channel on Cross Lake. There's a nice restaurant back there. They had boat docks. Come in by boat, hook it up, go up on, you know, have your drink and your hamburger and enjoy the view. But that wasn't our thing. No, we had packed lunch. We were going to do this, and my mom had already planned the menu, so it was set in stone, by gosh. And big, hot, you know, keep it hot kind of thermocooler kind of thing full of hot chili. And then for drinks, I think I had a lukewarm can of, you know, some kind of off-brand cola or something. Everybody else, well, we brought some cups. I brought a thermos of hot coffee.
Steaming hot coffee.
Hot coffee and hot chili. 98 degrees by that point. Sun is shining right down on us. We're sitting on, you know, rocking in the waves and just sweating to beat the band. And I just remember later on that night, my brother-in-law saying to my sister somewhere when the folks weren't around, boy, nothing says hot weather like hot chili and hot coffee. What the heck was that? One last bit with that. We got the cabin, and there were all these old vintage dishes in the cabins, you know, cabinets in the kitchen. And I mean, they'd probably find them now at antique stores or whatever, but I think it was my brother-in-law's idea. Well, I'll just rinse these out, you know, get the chili dregs off these dishes in the lake here. And started in with the first one, and all of a sudden, oh, and it, you know, let it go, and we just watched this chili-crusted bowl sort of float back and forth as it descended to the bottom of the lake. Well, that's enough. I think we're done now. put the lid on the chili, put the cap on the hot thermos of coffee, and let's get the heck out of here. This is ridiculous. Half of us had headaches from the heat. It was just crazy. Odd planning.
Wow.
Nice hot weather menu. Some hot chili and a steaming cup of coffee.
Nothing better on a hot day.
Oh, boy. Bring it on. But at least it wasn't s'mores.
That's right. So,
let this fire burn down, and there might be some relaxing ahead. So,
all right.
Back to the glow of St. Paul's number one we go.
All right, welcome back. Back to the Oakdale Studios.
Back home. Yes,
and,
indeed.
We've got the box. The Schmidt Scenic box. Bjorn's getting ready.
Scenics are here. Time is now. We'll reach deep into the collection and see what comes up this week. And FUD, we are looking at a flight of ringneck pheasants.
The ringneck pheasants.
The ringneck pheasants coming out of what appears to be a cut cornfield. And two roosters and a hen taking flight.
Is that a barn in the background?
Barn or? In the background. Big red barn and some clouds. And it's kind of hard to tell if this is getting close to dusk or if this is daybreak. I'm not quite sure. I don't know.
Let me take a closer look at that there.
Closer peek there, FUD. See what you think.
A white house next to the red barn.
Yes, indeed.
And turning the can over. Yeah, it's awfully nice. You know, we haven't gone into the fact that these cans were designed by Les Kuba.
Les Kuba.
Who is a Minnesota wildlife artist. Is from Hutchinson, Minnesota.
If I'm not mistaken, Les Kuba was winner of the waterfowl stamp or some kind of, oh, you know, different hunting stamps over various years. So
we should check that out, I think.
Probably worth looking into. I'll get flagged on that one, too. I'm not quite sure. But
a lot of these artists do, you know, will get the duck stamp winner more than one time. So he probably had a couple. I know, like, Terry Redlin had a few waterfowl stamps. So I'm sure Les Kuba did
right,
as well.
Right.
But here in Oakdale, we have plenty of turkey wandering around. We'll have deer upsetting the neighbors with chewing their garden plants. And I haven't seen any pheasants walking in the yard, but apparently they're nearby in the ditches. And it reminds me, too, when I was a wee lad that we used to live real close to was the lake across 94 from Tanner's Lake. And we used to call it Mud Lake.
Okay.
And I remember on a, I think on a,
one of the episodes you said when you're on the way to the Oakdale studio
it's
on
green.
A summer day.
Yeah. It looked like a positively verdant field I could run through with a soccer ball.
Yeah, just thick green. But that lake was, during the winter, I used to go down and wander around the cattails and follow pheasants, you know, pheasant tracks. And one of my first, like, home movies, I had the family Super 8 camera and saw some tracks, pheasant tracks, and I was taking a movie, you know. I was on the pursuit of this this pheasant, you know.
Big game hunter FUD.
Yes, right. I was ready.
Flugman afield.
Whenever he was going to burst out of the bulrushes, I was going to be ready to film him.
I love it.
And I did get, you know, a handheld shaky and out of focus shot of it as it flew away, but I was more excited to find his takeoff spot in the snow. It was like this neat pattern where his tail feathers and wings had sort of made an imprint in the
sure.
snow.
Oh, absolutely.
But so that was an early like filmmaking, you know, I thought, all right, I want to be a nature cinematographer someday.
And cut loose with that patented rooster pheasant call when you lift it up? Or?
Well, yeah, I seem to remember he cackled at me as he took off. But boy, that is a startling one, isn't it?
It is. Well, to me, it always sounds like a fairly rusty hacksaw going through a beer can.
Yeah, you know,
just really kind of abrasive and wah, you know what you're hearing.
Yeah, there's no mistaking the pheasant, and I don't believe they're native to North America. I think they're
an import, perhaps.
I think so. I think if I remember my Stan Tekella bird guide, that I think might be from
Asia,
yeah.
Yeah, I feel like it's an Asian import to the country.
But, well, it's been here long enough now, we've adopted it as our own.
Without a doubt.
They're beautiful, though. And now, you've had experience, I've never eaten a pheasant, but you, I know we've talked about
oh,
it
yes.
in a recent
yes.
show.
Yes, my dad was a big pheasant hunter, and that was the normal quarry. That's what came home, you know, 9 out of 10 times. It was ringneck pheasant that was going to end up in the oven. I loved it. I just remember thinking as a kid, boy, this is better than anything. Hmm. And this is one of those birds, too, where I've heard, you know, chefs saying, oh, you have to let them age for a while.
Hmm.
Yeah, you know, the bird is shot and cleaned. You hang it for a few days before it develops any flavor whatsoever. And, you know, to me, I don't know if that means so it gets gamier or, gee, this tastes a little spoiled, you know? I mean, what does that mean? But, you know, I think that was kind of my dad's deal. Those birds would sit out in the garage for a day or two before he'd pluck them and, you know, he'd gut them right away. Obviously,
yeah.
you want to get all the offal out of that bird. But, yeah, they'd sit out there for a while. And then, well, tonight I'm going to go out and pluck feathers. You want to join me? And come on, man. Oh, God. You know, I'm here to eat it. I just don't want to watch you. You know, but he always saved me 2 or 3 of the big tail feathers. You know, put these in your room. Put them in your ball cap, whatever. Act like you shot it. Look what I got, you know. I remember being a kid, too, thinking, can I cut this into a quill and impersonate, you know, the founding fathers scribbling away on parchments? Or,
yeah.
I wasn't sure, but, yeah, I loved it. I thought it had a great taste. I'm not quite sure what my mom did to them, you know. Anything different than maybe what she did with the chicken, I'm not really sure. But maybe it was just that exotic element, too. You know, something we don't get every day, and you're not going to find it in the store.
Right.
Which, that's kind of a misnomer. I mean, you look in the right high-end grocery stores and you'll find, you know, duck, pheasant. There's all kinds of things from farms.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, these always came from a farm, all right. I mean, usually he had shot them either on my grandfather's farm up in Kensington or an uncle's farm out in Cyrus, you know, western Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of getting... I always get the feeling that pheasants, you're headed west. You know, you headed west kind of towards the Dakota borders and where people were farming grain and corn. And that's what you were going to find. And, you know, FUD, ironically enough, I've been offered too at some point, if we're ever feeling itchy trigger fingers, I've got a, you know, my wife's uncle has a place down by Northfield and Dundas. Hmm. And it's a farm spread, and he's told me many times, you know, Bjorn, you ever want to go for a walk, you're welcome here. So that could be a future expedition. Perhaps we'll...
Might have to take advantage of that.
Grab the digital recorders and...
yeah.
I got to put down the recorder. I got a shot.
Go for it.
Dang. Yeah. Who knows? Right? It's an interesting bird. You know, they get up and they go for 100 yards or so, and then they land again. They just kind of glide into cover, and so it just becomes, okay, we'll walk a little farther and maybe raise these things again.
Yeah, they I think they prefer to run more than fly, because I suppose they're more vulnerable. If they can hide.
Yeah, if they can stay low and undercover. Well, that brings back a couple things. A gentleman I worked with at one point did a lot of his hunting in South Dakota, and he talked about how in his hunting parties, it was considered a better shot to actually bag a pheasant on the ground.
Oh, really?
And for some reason, and, you know, Don, I don't know, maybe at some point we'll get the phone board working here, but someone might call in. I always felt like Minnesota kind of gentleman's rules, you give the thing a fighting chance, you know, let it go airborne.
Yeah.
And then you test your shooting prowess. If you can't bring it down on the wing... I don't know.
Yeah.
For some reason, it's like shooting fish in a barrel or something. You know?
Right.
That's ridiculous. Why would you do that? But, and then I can't help but think, too, well, I missed the pheasant, but I bagged Uncle Ted. You know, he's over there popping up and down, clutching his red wing boot. And,
or Duke, the old black lab that
took off running and then somehow managed to go airborne. There he goes. Bring him down.
Seems to remember a dream your dad
strange
had.
Strange dream my father had at one point, yes. But that comes to mind. And then just the year upon year driving up the Cross Lake chain, you know, the Whitefish chain, driving up to the cabin. And anywhere 45 minutes outside of the Twin Cities, west, south, north, east, didn't really matter. You start seeing the signs, you know, don't mow ditches. Pheasants forever. Don't mow the dishes. I think pheasants do love kind of hanging out in those roadsides where there's just thick grass and cover, and you know, I'm guessing perhaps fewer coyotes, or I don't know. You know, I don't know what it is about the ditches and the roadsides, but I think they love that cover. And perhaps there's a lot of forage in there for them, and wild grass or you know, some kind of seed. I'm guessing. And showing my ineptitude here with pheasant hunting, I'm not sure, but clearly they must love them. Hence all the signs, please don't mow the ditches. And, you know, 5 times out of 10 too, we'd be driving by these huge lawnmowers hacking up the ditches as we'd be going up north.
Hey,
well, I guess they weren't really paying attention to the billboards.
Not a pheasant hunter, are you?
Didn't get the word on that. I think I even heard at one point how detrimental that could be to local pheasant populations when they're mowing. If birds were nesting in ditch sites, you know, the mowers coming through and just wreaking havoc on young pheasant populations. So, I don't know. Perhaps someone from MnDOT will call up and say, how dare you, you know, besmirch our good name here. We're just trying to keep the ditches clear, so if you have car trouble or whatever, but...
I seem to remember that several years ago I was at the sportsman's show on the fairgrounds they have annually, and
great Minnesota get together.
They had a drawing contest for kids like under the age of 14, and I think the title of the program was called Ditches Are for the Birds or something. And the kids just drew basically pheasants, maybe other wildlife, you know, habitating in ditches, and the importance of keeping those ditches full of habitat for, you know,
right,
for the birds to live
cover
in.
Cover for the birds.
So they were trying to raise awareness then. Another interesting thing about pheasants I learned from my dad is, say you want to hunt them on a game farm, that's kind of a common practice. I know he's done that with my Uncle Jim quite a few times, and it's pretty fascinating. You call up, reserve your time, you purchase however many birds you expect to hunt, you know, maybe six. And what they do to prepare them is they fold the heads under the wings, and it makes them pass out, fall asleep. Mm. And then they just lay them in the cover, and I don't know when they wake up or if you have a dog.
Come out of their reverie.
Right. What's happening? And, oh, my goodness, fly away.
Wide-eyed.
But that's pretty, because I always used to think, well, won't the birds just fly away? Like, I'm out of here. But no, I think if they're raised on a farm being fed all the time,
they stay close to their food source. And
right. So, right. I mean, you could say,
sporting?
Sporting, but I still think they get up and they fly away from you. You know, they're still wary enough.
I paid for this quarry. They're out there somewhere. Where'd they go? Hey, you know, I bought 6 birds. Where'd they all go? That was on you to find, you know?
Yeah.
I've talked to a few people who've done that as well, and they've come back with their number. So apparently that's a thing. I'm not quite sure. You know, I've also heard on the game farm sometimes they'll fill pheasants with helium and then just let them go. And it's kind of like an untied balloon just rocketing up into the air. All right, maybe I'm going to say that's hogwash.
But you had me going there. What?
We'll let that get edited out. Look at it go. Wow. Yeah, draw a beat on that thing.
Yeah, fire
explode.
On it.
Explode. The Hindenburg. The humanity.
Right. Oh, my God.
The pheasantry. Oh, this is terrible.
There's nothing left. Nothing left to hang.
3 birds. I have 3 shooters aiming in the same bird. Well, now that's another thing. It's just, you know, you were talking earlier, Fudd, about, and you've all got your kind of clock gauge on the horizon.
Which part of the sky you get to shoot at.
So, you know, 3 shooters all drawing a bead on the same bird and pulverizing this thing. Wow. The sport of the field and understanding the gents' rules for who gets to shoot.
I know I've told this story, but I don't think it made it into the episode where my brother and I were out with an uncle, and we were walking along railroad tracks, and a pheasant did get up out of the ditch, you know, down from the track, and I think the 3 of us just watched the thing fly away. And later, when
enjoying the beauty and majesty,
met up with my dad, and then he asked if we saw anything. Well, one got up. Then my uncle said, "Yeah, I let the boys have a chance, but nobody shot. It was just kind of funny. I don't know if we were just like, well, are you going to shoot it? No, are you going to shoot
your
it?
Your turn. What? No. Hey, well, I don't want to."
If I remember right, Uncle Joe was in the front. He was walking point, and we may have had Duke, the old black lab, who
you bet.
Was getting frozen in the nether regions.
Sure.
It was a cold morning, but I never... never shot one. Again, I had a shot at a coot, and my dad has a funny story that I've got actually recorded him sharing a story of me firing skyward towards some bluebills, and they were long gone, but I'll save that for another time.
That's one thing I've always wondered, too, is just, you know, pheasant, it's fairly obvious. They don't stay airborne all that long. You take your shots, and then they're already gliding back into cover, you know?
Yeah.
Ducks, on the other hand,
you got one chance.
It seems, yeah, and I've heard that from so many shooters. Oh, don't even bother now. And it would appear that they're still within range, and then you realize you're basically, you know, the range of a shotgun isn't all that great,
right?
So as you're seeing them kind of recede into the sunset, don't bother. You know, you missed your chance.
You're just shooting to make noise at that point. I think. Yeah, these bluebills were like straight up into the air by the time I got my act together to try to fire. And that, you know, that's one of the first lessons too, also in gun safety. You know, don't shoot straight up into the sky.
Right.
Not that this shot is going to come down 10 minutes later and put little pellets in your head, but it's just not a good practice.
Raining shot, hallelujah. Absolutely.
But the only other thing I can think of when I think of pheasants, of course, is South Dakota and how, you know, in Minnesota, you'll see various kinds of roadkill, you know, lots of squirrels. And these days, it's strange to see, like, possums.
A lot of possum out there, yeah. This has been a year I've noticed. A lot of
But
mangled possum?
Yeah.
Deer.
But in South Dakota, I was surprised at how many pheasants, at least on this one trip I took, coming back. It seemed like every mile or so, there would be a dead pheasant on the side of the road. That probably because they're so heavily populated, I think, compared to Minnesota, that...
Just getting up in front of cars
and
meeting their end.
Right, you know, unless they're... You know, suicide pheasants, I don't know.
Never can tell.
I can't handle it anymore. These ditches are being mowed out.
I wonder what that is about South Dakota that makes it such a spot.
I don't know. It's a magic land. It's weird. You cross that Missouri River, and it's a whole different landscape. The rolling plains, you know, not as many trees, but it's pretty awesome. But yeah, maybe we're going to have to... Take your uncle up on
take
walk
a walk
the
through the wilds of Dundas, the cut cornfields of Dundas, Minnesota. That gives me trepidation sometimes as I'm thinking, boy, are we close to the freeways and you know, two major colleges.
Oh, right.
Strolling along, but you don't have to. You know, again, the guns don't have much range.
Yeah,
and you get to the outskirts where that farm is, and there's. There shouldn't be any college students running around, and you're far enough away from the freeway that you're not...
Probably wouldn't want to bring up your .22 like you did when you were
no,
a kid, aiming
no,
at a woodcock.
No, that yeah, going after the mighty Timberdoodle with my pea shooter, that's probably not going to happen. But.
Oh, but it's fun. It's just...
The good old days.
Fire the gun. So
yes,
either Dundas, Minnesota, or one of these game farms my dad... But I'm such a rookie these days. I know my dad wishes I would have hunted a lot more with him, but...
I'm probably at that point, too, Fudd, where it's going to take me long enough to get the safety off. And, you know, are all my compadres here in the safe range? I'm not,
right.
You know...
Yes.
Don't want to be winging a fellow hunter.
Right. Well, gun safety, you know, it's good to be safe and... You just do it the way my grandpa did. He was more out for the, you know, wearing of the really nice clothes, carrying the really nice gun, and maybe once in a while taking a shot. But, you know, why bother? It's just
the experience.
Being out in the field. So.
Taking the walk.
Well, maybe, have we reached the end of our pheasant?
I think the pheasants are taken care of at this point. I think we can say adios to that Schmidt Scenic. The mighty Les Kuba's fine artwork here, and
yes,
and,
indeed.
I'll just say that my sort of surrogate grandparents who grew up kitty corner from me, I know they had one if not two Les Kuba paintings in their house. They were aficionados of hunting, artwork, you know, dogs.
Oh yes,
game birds, ducks, you know, the whole bits, and I'm fairly sure they had that was, and those were prized, you know. Pieces of artwork, and it's like, this is a big name, this is Les Kuba, these were hard to come by. Well, I think that kind of wraps it up for this edition of Fireside Food on Cabin Country and cooking around the campfire.
Indeed, sir.
And we've covered a lot of ground with that, the fun of multiple cans of various things hitting pots, sizzling away, also... Covered the length and width of the mighty pheasants as they appear on the Schmidt Scenic collection.
Beautiful Rising Les Kuba design.
Cut corn, absolutely. That's all good. I think our next episode here on Cabin Country, if you'll join us next time, we'll be talking about shutting down the cabin at the end of the season. And then possibly to the later season treks with the 5-gallon pails that get flipped upside down as you... auger through the ice and tackle the great cabin country tradition of ice fishing. How many pounds of ice can you catch this year? Absolutely. So something to kind of wet your whistle for the next edition of Cabin Country. Hope you'll join us. We'll keep the coffee pot going. I remain Bjorn Lloydstad,
and I'm Fudd Klugman,
and we'll see you next time on Cabin Country.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.